So unlike other assessment tools, this is, the theory goes that you actually hardwire your personality very, very early in life. So your Enneagram type or your personality type really shouldn't change over the course of your life. What will happen is you'll get more mature and certain things will maybe soften a little bit, or certain attributes of yourself might come out more. But your fundamental structure of how you think and feel, and basically it's driven by kind of a core fear and a core desire or need. And so those two things are pretty fundamental over the course of your whole life.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 128 with executive coach Aaron Rocchio.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey girls and guys, thanks for joining in today. Hope you're having an awesome day. I'm your host, JC Preston, and in this particular session, I'm joined by longtime co-host Veronica Kieran. If this is the first time that you're listening in, this is the show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you find and execute your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Now, as some of you guys might know, I have a bit of a background in the coaching arena, and I started back in grad school and did it a few years professionally after that. And, you know, it's definitely a rewarding profession. And one of the things that really helped me early on was having a knowledge of different personalities. There are several personality tests that are out there that you guys might actually know. The MBTI, Winslow is one. And the DISC assessment, you know, these are just a few of the well-known examples. But the thing is that knowing personalities can really help you get a good base understanding of how certain people work. And if you know what your type is and understand others, then you'll know how to interact with them at a higher level. It's really like having a superpower, to be honest with you. I mean, you want a sixth sense? There it is. Another well-known personality tool is the Enneagram, which this session's guest, Aaron Rocchio, uses with her coaching clients. And in this conversation, we'll be talking about how she actually uses it to excel her coaching work. Also in this conversation, we talk about how she works with teams to go from good to great, how people might avoid burning out in a new role, and what she'd help Richard from Silicon Valley with as an executive coach. Before we get to the conversation, I want to remind you guys of Namecheap. And here's the thing. In business today, we all have to have websites. You know, over the years, lots of options popped up. There's even services where you can pay a monthly fee to host a simply designed website. However, sometimes those websites don't do exactly what you want them to do. And, you know, this is when you might want to think about using something like WordPress. WordPress is, I have to say, easier than ever to work with. Back when I first was designing WordPress sites back in, 2009, 2010, you had to know a lot of code. But the themes that are out there today, you know, they have built-in templates where all you have to really do is just, you know, push a button and installs the theme on the WordPress site, and then you just fill in the content relevant to your business, really. And, you know, getting WordPress can be somewhat of a task if you don't know what you're doing for the first time, though. So what's cool about Namecheap is that they made it a really easy process to not only install WordPress on your own host, but you can actually have them help you through an easy-to-use online chat platform to get whatever you need to get done. Also, they make it easy to buy and install security for your site by easy access to SSL certificates. If you've been hacked, you definitely want to get one of those. And oh, yeah, let's not forget WhoWizGuard, which keeps random people on the web from looking up your hosting info. So if you want an inexpensive way to register your domains or get some help with your hosting, try out Namecheap. And if you go to newinceptions.com/Namecheap today, you'll actually be able to try out WhoisGuard your first year at no additional charge. Again, that's newinceptions.com/Namecheap. All right, guys. So don't forget to subscribe to the show on CastBox, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. As usual, show notes and show note extras of the conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/128. And I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm JC Preston, your host, and with me today, first time in a long time, is Veronica Kieran. Thank you so much for joining us. Veronica, what is going on? It's been a while since you've actually been on as a co-host.
Yeah, I know. It's been quite a while. I've been wondering, you know, what's going on with JC? But yeah, life's been good. I'm working on my audiobook for my book, which is coming out in September. And
finally.
I know. and I don't know if we talked about me selling my company, but I sold one of my companies.
Yes. And this was the one, the website? Mm-hmm,
the tech
design
company. Yeah. So I'm free. I'm a full-time coach now. It's awesome. Couple milestones.
Yeah, right. And another milestone we recently helped someone with was that we were both on Angel Jones's traveling interview show called 12 Minute Conversations. And, you know, here in Indy, we were able to give him 33 interviews and it was ridiculous. We would have like every quarter of the hour, we had a new guest in there.
Wow.
And you were actually on that show as well. What was your experience with him?
Yeah, it was awesome. And he actually came to my house to interview me.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, you know, last year I was on his podcast remotely and that was really neat. But I really enjoyed meeting him. His energy is so great. And it was great to meet his wife too. And it's just, I think, really neat what they're doing, that they're traveling all over the country to meet everybody that they interviewed. How many interviews is it? Like thousands, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think they're going for like 1,001 during their travels, at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you guys can check out Angel Jones on Facebook, see where he's going, and you know, if you're in the tour of where he is going, you know, the good chance that you'll be able to actually hop on with him. And so make sure that you check that out. But speaking of great conversations, and I'm really, really excited about having today's guest on. You guys might remember that one of the things that I was starting to do early on in the early New Inceptions days was to become an executive coach. And, you know, in doing that, I became a member of the John Maxwell team. I've always been a huge, even from grad school, I've been a huge fan of John Maxwell. But I soon realized that coaching, as rewarding as it was, I don't necessarily have the best personality for it. Sometimes I can be a little bit impatient and I'm better suited as an educator. And that said, I'm joined by you, Veronica, being a coach, as well as today's guest, Aaron. And for the last decade, Aaron has worked with executives across industries, various industries, to find the sweet spot between business results and personal meaning. Personal meaning. We'll underline that right there. And at her core, Aaron wants to give leaders the gift of freedom, the freedom to be themselves, you know, make big life choices and thrive. Aaron, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Hey, JC and Veronica. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here. I am doing awesome.
Yeah, total pleasure having you with us. And yeah, looking forward to getting into today's conversation.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. And I love that the three of us have the background of coaching. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, we can really get into the details. So Aaron, I want to talk to you a little bit about your background because you've been doing this for a decade. Is it exactly 10 years or is it even over a decade?
So I've been a consultant for over 10 years. I've been working in the leadership development space, kind of outside of corporate in an educational setting and personal development for a long time. Honestly, I've been doing some personal development stuff where I had a chance to dabble in coaching, gosh, since I was 17. So
wow.
I'm kind of a big nerd about about this stuff and have gotten into it early on. And then I would say I've been solidly executive coaching through various formats. We'll talk about that in a second, but
yeah,
probably up to a decade. So just shy of
that
and try to mostly focus on that today in my work.
Uh-huh. So what was it that attracted you to full-time coaching with executives as opposed to, I mean, there's so many, it sounds like you had so much experience in your background that you could have kind of gone in any angle.
And on top of that, what made you get into it as early as 17 years old?
That's weird. So let me just tell you guys a little caveat. I feel like I have such an unusual and circuitous background. You know, you've seen those little doodles on Facebook that say an actual life or career is like a bunch of squiggly lines.
Yeah,
that's like totally my life.
Yeah.
So I'll give you some like full background real quick. I'm the oldest of three kids and kind of the high achiever, tried to be the good girl in school. I played sports growing up, went to college on a full athletic scholarship, played softball at Northwestern, and was trying to do my very best at kind of fulfilling that image. And of course, there were, you know, it didn't work in many ways, but it did do a lot of things. One of the things that helped me when I was 17, I had this kind of pivotal moment. And I do have to say, I'll kind of talk about this. Part of my path is working in and helping grow and kind of following the footsteps of my father through a family business. And so this was kind of like our dinner time conversation, you know, about leadership and being your best self and what's getting in your way and what are your values. Like, these were normal conversations in my household. So it was weird. I totally get that. I wasn't like your normal, you know, carefree 17-year-old. And so kind of dove into this world of learning about myself at that point, and then really tried to avoid this as an industry for a long time. So to be totally clear, it's like, I'm not going to go into consulting. I'm not going to be a coach. I'm not going to do this thing. And I'm going to go save the world. Had a belief that, yeah, I thought business was like really bad and evil. And as I learned more and got more mature, I realized that actually there's, you know, we spend like 80% of our lives at work. And so to make a meaningful contribution, if you can help people change their experience of work, that's actually a great way to live your life. And so that's kind of how I came about it and pivoted, became more open to it.
Yeah. Yes. I just like in it with you because I totally get the avoiding business, thinking business is evil. I even went through like a self-loathing period where I had, I started my business almost a decade ago as well. And even though I was enjoying the freedom of having my own business, it felt like you're talking about like almost icky, even though I wasn't doing anything icky. I had to go through that evolution of realizing, no, like you can use business to do so many good things. And now we have the B Corp movement, which is amazing to have sustainable business all over the world.
Totally.
But even before that was a thing, you could still do amazing things in business. You just have to choose to do it. So I'm completely like in it with you right now. So, instead of working with, or at least you might have to clarify this for me, but instead of working with just anyone who has a career, you chose specifically to work with C-suite executives. That's correct, right?
Yes. And that's my focus today is high potential leaders, kind of typically in corporate or people like yourself who are building growing businesses and are kind of the ones of people of influence, I should say. So they've got that latitude to make decisions and affect change.
Yeah. So you're looking almost at like the reverberations of where you affect this one person, but that affects this whole tree of people below them or laterally within their company.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Exactly. Finding those points of impact and influence. I love that reverberation. That's a beautiful image. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of all that. In fact, I actually did my grad studies in organizational leadership. So
rock on. I
know what you're talking about. One of the things that I did learn even way back then and have continued to use since then, these days is personality tests. And back then, I mean, the one that you find in academia is the MBTI or the, you know, Jungen 16 or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But you know, it's INTJ or ENTF or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's just so many different variations that, you know, I kind of pursued a way myself of, of finding something that worked for me. And my personal favorite is similar to the DISC profile, but it's a little bit more elaborate, and I can actually...
What is it?
Well, it involves, we'll say that it involves shapes and frustrations. And based on your ranking of certain shapes and frustrations, I can kind of get an idea of what you are. And it's about 95% accurate. So I'm pretty happy with it. It's fun. You like to talk about the Enneagram in your work and with your clients. And I first ran across that when I was in the foundation of Dane Maxwell's. And, you know, I've run across it before, but can you tell us a little bit more what that is?
Yeah, no, I love it very much. It's, and I agree, there's a ton of different tools out there. What makes Enneagram different is that it's actually an open source kind of tool. It's been around for thousands of years and is rooted kind of its foundations are much more spiritually oriented, but it's used in kind of practical and business applications today. So there's a ton about it out there. So it's basically a 9-pointed personality system. So there's 9 types, if you will, but it's really dynamic. So unlike Myers-Briggs and others where they say, okay, here's your type, get to know that type really well, and maybe how you interact with other people. This is developmental completely. So it's looking at you at your very best, your healthiest, most aware and conscious self, all the way down to you at your super stressed out and overwhelmed, unconscious, reactive self, and everywhere in between. And it can help you self-identify and self-manage, self-coach, you know, so you can go, wow, I didn't realize how upset I am about this. I need to, what's a healthy way of responding instead of my triggered automatic reaction, which usually is not effective, right? Especially when you're leading or interacting with other people. So it's been a really powerful tool. I love it very much.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've heard different people talking about it on different podcasts and things like that. And I've tried to do some research into it, but is there any good resources that someone can use to kind of learn more about it?
Absolutely. I'll tell you my top two. Number one is, if you're going to use it in the business setting, then I would highly recommend the Enneagram in Business. You just Google that. The website is the Enneagram in Business, and it's Enneagram. And the woman who is the source of that site and runs that business was the person who trained me and in how to coach with it, and really powerful stuff. She's a prolific writer about the Enneagram and really accessible stuff and free stuff on there. So it's really cool. And then the other kind of go-to source is the Enneagram Institute. And they actually have the very best online survey that you can take, you know, far and away. And their survey is called the RHETI, R-H-E-T-I. And you can just go on there and take it for like, I don't know, $12 or something as an individual. If you say, I really want to just know my type or learn about the different types and how they interact with each other.
Right, right. Well, and you know, one of the things that I've looked into, so a couple of my favorite books that when people are first getting started is Standout and Strength Finders.
Yes, and I love Strengthfinders.
You know, I kind of figured that this is one of those things that I need to eventually educate myself on.
I have to tell you, I've been having two conversations with people this week where they said, God, you're like the fourth person this week to mention the Enneagram. So I must look it up because this is annoying now. Everybody keeps talking about it.
Yeah, super useful. I think I've taken it before. I can't remember my number. I think I'm a 4.
Ooh, cool.
But I can't remember right now. So I guess I have to take, I think I just retook it last month and I can't remember.
Oh,
but do you work when you start with a client, do you immediately work with them on the Enneagram or do you use that intuitively when you feel like it's time within your work?
Great question. So it depends. Primarily it's in the beginning. It's a really helpful grounding framework to say, because what's cool about it is if like knowing you're a 4, let's say, I automatically include into certain patterns of the way you think and the way you might react emotionally and how you might behave. And so already I can be anticipating certain areas that we might need to work on. Not like I know this already about you. You're a unique person and have your own experience, but it is a bit of an accelerator. in that process. And so that's cool. So I like to do it in the beginning. Some people, you know, if I work with someone completely on burnout only, I'll use it, but maybe in a little different way, like later on in the process, once we've solved the acute problem, which is different than someone that says, oh, I want an executive coach and I want to, you know, think about a promotion in 3 years and how do I become a better leader or something like that.
Yeah. One thing that I think about the Enneagram is that, you know, for our video game players out there, or maybe you just kind of know of these role-playing games, right? You know, basically an Enneagram is a way of realizing if you're like a wizard or a, you know, a barbarian or, you know, these different kinds of characters. And then how can you play as part of a team? So I think it really helps you figure out to know what your actual role is in any given organization, really.
Cool. Yeah, I love that application of it because it can absolutely help you figure out your strengths and kind of what you naturally bring and contribute to a group and say, you know what, I'm not going to try to be like so-and-so. I'm just going to be the best darn version of myself. And that is to be a great whatever.
So Yeah, it's really affirming.
Yeah.
So if you're working with somebody for a time period and then they were to start in a new role, so you've done the Enneagram already, would you do it again if they start in a new role?
No. So unlike other assessment tools, this is, the theory goes that you actually kind of hardwire your personality very, very early in life. So your Enneagram type or your personality type really shouldn't change over the course of your life. What will happen is you'll get more mature. And certain things will maybe soften a little bit or certain attributes of yourself might come out more. But your fundamental structure of how you think and feel and basically it's driven by kind of a core fear and a core desire or need. And so those two things are pretty fundamental over the course of your whole life.
Okay.
You power up. They're the levels. Yeah.
Boom. Exactly. You got it.
So with that, with starting a new role, I do feel like sometimes we get promoted or we start a new role, we move laterally, but it, you know, typically, ideally, I guess I would say, life is kind of a honing situation. So you're leveling up or you're moving laterally, but it's a better fit. And so there's that excitement with that. And I think that it could be really easy, to kind of miss the boat on managing the new stress that also comes with a new role.
Yeah.
So how are you working with clients, either using the Enneagram or any of your other tools, in order to kind of refocus them or support them as they are entering that exciting time?
That is such a cool question. I think that this is, you know, the topic around stress is so personal. And people get bummed out when I say, guys, there's no like silver bullet to solve this problem, that each situation and each person's going to have their own individual or unique approach and solution and focus. But one of the things that I found is that usually there's a combination of a couple things when someone takes on a new role and they're overwhelmed or feeling like they don't have the skills or capabilities yet or whatever, and they're getting stressed out about it. First thing is, I think there's something structural, like how are you asked to get your job done, right? What are the ways of doing your work? Are you, and then most importantly, are you doing the right kind of work? So you may have gotten a promotion, but is it connected to something that you care about? So JC, this is something you and I were talking about, right? Like personal mission, meaning and purpose is absolutely vital to sustaining success.
Exactly.
And if that's not a fit, you'll notice, or your company will notice, and it's going to come out, right? So, so those are two really important, like what's your work and then how are you doing the work? And then there's some personal attributes around how can I be most resilient as I'm doing this? So what do I need? And this is also going to look different for everybody. Like what kind of renewal do I need in my life to support me in bringing my full energy to work? You know, like if I... and some of that could be physical stuff. You guys have heard a lot about physical well-being. Some of it's emotional, some of it's spiritual, some of it is in relationship and community and making sure you've got the right support structure. You know, so you've got people to vent to and you know, have a thought partner. You mentioned a mentor earlier on, like mentoring is critical for people navigating new situations. And so as a coach, what I do is out of all of this context, help them really declutter that noise and say, what are your most essential focus areas right now? So there could be 500 things that you look at and work on. That's not going to actually help you. What's the one to two things right now that we need to be working on? And then after you feel confident, what's the next one to two things?
Yeah, you have to narrow your focus in order to, I mean, there's only so much capacity each brain, each human has for a certain amount of problems. You can't do it all at once.
100%. Yeah.
This may actually lead into talking about burnout, which is totally fine, but how do you work with somebody if they're starting a new role, or they're not necessarily in a new role, but you're working with them and you're finding that some of their stress is coming from structural constraints that cannot be changed within their work?
Yeah. So sometimes and I'll bring that up, I'll say is what part of this, external world is changeable? Do you have control over it? What can we possibly shift? And if they say, look, I've got to do this as it is for the next year. And basically it's about survival. Then we're just really clear that that's what it is. This isn't about that person going and really thriving at work or in their life. It's surviving this short-term environment. And then we're going to have the broader conversation about how to connect that to something that is more sustainable and workable for them.
Everything's an experience.
You know? Right.
Exactly.
Right. I was going to ask, do you work with reframing an attitude, even if their attitude isn't bad because it's actually a bad situation, working within their mentality about it, at least to try to put it in a place that's either compartmentalized or, somehow healthy, but less, influential.
Yes, totally. And you guys know this, and I'm probably preaching to the choir, but mindset is really so vital, because once you have the mindset aligned with reality, like if you're fighting against reality all day long, that will burn you out. You're going to get completely exhausted and frustrated on every level. So part of the work is to just accept what is, what's changeable, what's not changeable, what's the current reality we're dealing with, and then how do you get your head wrapped around it? And then how do you get your emotional self on board with that? So many people I know have this epic battle where they can intellectually get themselves there and be like, okay, I'm going to tough it out for a year. But in their heart, they hate it and they're miserable and they want to be with their kids. And that is not a path to success, certainly. And I would say, I don't even know how some people will survive that 1 year or what have you, whatever the situation is when you've got that kind of tension.
Yeah, I love that phrase, fighting reality. I don't think I've heard somebody phrase it as fighting reality before, but you're right. There's at least a part of you. In my work, I call it alignment, but there's a part of you that's totally not in the game.
Yes.
And that's fracturing on so many levels.
Yes, I love that word, alignment. I love it.
Yeah. So actually, this is a perfect lead-in to talk about your work around burnout, because if you are in a position that isn't aligned or you're fighting reality, you're fracturing in some way, that's going to eventually lead to burnout. And for me, burnout is one of the most important things that I speak about, because I have burnt out, and I actually burnt out to the point of having PTSD and totally having to abandon my first career as a disaster relief worker. Like, I can't do it anymore.
Oh my gosh.
I can't walk into a Red Cross at all. It's just done. Right.
Wow.
So, as you're working with somebody, probably not to that extreme, of course, but as you're working with somebody who you're seeing this burnout happening, are you able to reel them back from the burnout, or do you have to help them walk another path?
Yeah. So for some people, there is the only way out is to change what you're doing, right? This situation is causing a mental health issue or a physical health problem that's so severe. If you don't get yourself out of this environment and solve that now, nothing will get better. And so that would be really acute, but that's real for people. And I do work with folks who say, I'm having severe anxiety attacks all the time. I, as an executive coach, I don't handle that level of mental health. I will refer someone to a therapist, but it's something that we say, you get that sorted out. We have to handle this now. And then we can talk about what is a better fit. So for some people, it might be, you know, I've got to leave this entirely. For others, it might be, I think this is the right company. This is the right organization or right industry. Like I love, as an example, I love, you know, disaster relief work. This just, the way I'm doing it is not healthy for me. So either it's a role change, it's realigning with your boss around expectations. It's building different practices around how your team works together and gets stuff done. So it can be a function of you don't have to leave completely to make it better. And that's always what I'm kind of aiming for is it makes me really brokenhearted when people have loved something and then they said, I got so burned out, I had to leave that industry entirely. Because to me, that is so, so sad.
Yeah, it's a baby with the bathwater, and you don't always have to do that.
Well, you don't, but at the same time, you know, there's potential for greener pastures. I mean, my wife, for example, you know, she'd been in HR work for a good part of 10 years, and she started getting to a point where, you know, in her day-to-day activities, it got more about actual bringing people in and laying them off because... It was this crazy turnaround, and she wasn't able to do the work that she wanted to do, and in that that sphere, and she, it's just one of those things where it's just like just she couldn't take it anymore. She moved. She actually thought that it might have been the company, so she moved to another one. And I don't think she was only at that next company for like 3 months, and it was just like she was just seeing the same stuff over and over.
That's disappointing. I mean, but I totally hear that because, so sometimes one of the things that's emerged through talking about this with people and the work I've been doing is appreciating the fact that there are seasons to our careers. And sometimes we're in a burnout season. And actually, if we know that, I think you said this, Veronica, like if there's some compartmentalization around it or saying this is time bound, like I'm only going to do this for 3 months. And then there will be light at the end of the tunnel that can sometimes make current reality okay. Like we can get through it and it's fine. But if that's just open-ended and you're just looking at a sea of misery and it's acute pain and you're suffering, well, dang it, you need to get out of there. And, you know, like you said, JC, really carve up something that feels more true and more aligned with what you actually care about.
And right now we're working through that. We're trying to figure out what her next point in life is. But she's kind of like Veronica was with the recovery work. It's a steep incline. You know,
they're not dissimilar. Yeah, you know, and I just want to say one thing about that. One of the things that I've been noticing, and the research shows this, is that people that are in service-oriented types of roles, right? So disaster relief, HR is service oriented. The work that we do as coaches is service oriented. So much of us today are service workers in one form or fashion. We are much more at risk of burnout than others, you know, versus folks that make widgets or whatnot, because human relationships and dynamics within organizations and cultures, all of this creates stressors for us that we're not always conscious of. So we might go, God, I'm so tired. And I don't know why. Like I can't pinpoint it. Some of that too is related to the way that like what we are doing in terms of our work with other people.
People take energy for sure.
So speaking of team culture, one of the things that I mentioned early on was that I'm a big fan of John Maxwell's work. And you happen to work with cultivating high-performing teams, and ideally making them go from good to great, as John would say. And, you know, I'm kind of curious, especially with you using the Enneagram, what kind of strategies do you employ when you're working with your clients? I mean, do you focus more on culture building, more on, you know, interpersonal relationships, and kind of how the different, the different Enneagram numbers work with each other?
Great question. So I typically do a few things. So I would say any kind of work I do with a team or an organization or even an individual for that matter, there's kind of three levels that I'm touching on. One is strategic, you know, and that's taking into account the bigger picture that they're working in and what makes sense for them, given what their goals are and that sort of thing. So once it's like a very strategic thing, same is true for teams. What are our goals as a team? Where are we trying to get to? What's getting in our way of that, et cetera, mm-hmm. to start? And then the other one is, this other primary one is developmental. And a lot of that is about how we're working together in relationship. And so whether it's new teams or teams that have been working together for a while, but are having difficulty in how they're collaborating, and that's where the Enneagram can come into play. And so I use it as one tool amongst some other conversations to make sure they've got a solid foundation to build alignment, to get clear on the path forward, to make sure everybody's really clear on what they're doing, what their roles are, what their accountabilities are. And then creating agreements around how they're going to do that work using a tool like the Enneagram and values and norms to make sure that as they go, they're conscious of each other, their own needs and styles, and they're doing it in a way that's healthy. So it's what I like about the Enneagram is it kind of preempts conflict. So like once I know your type, I know the things that are driving you. I want, instead of getting irritated by you, I would say, oh, now I understand where so-and-so is coming from, and let me adapt myself to actually work better with them instead of just railing against, mm-hmm. you know, their way of doing things.
Right.
Yeah. Banging your head against the wall.
Yeah.
As it were.
Like, why can't they think like me?
Right.
And you learn like, well, there's 8 other ways of thinking besides my own. Doesn't mean mine is superior.
Are you familiar with the show Silicon Valley by any chance?
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
Okay, so if you were working with a high technical person like Richard, you know, for example, uh-huh. you know, help him get better uh-huh. as a leader and knowing everything that we know yeah. about the show, where would you even start?
Yeah. Yeah, so bless his heart. Richard, and I would say this is kind of a thread along all the work I do. Richard lacks emotional intelligence, right? So really good technically, but doesn't have the EQ to understand how to connect with others in a strong way, build alignment amongst his team, right? Everybody's kind of in their own little mm-hmm. island. Doesn't really bring them together under the same banner. So that would be the first place I would start, is probably kind of giving him the capabilities to even start to walk that path. Because the path to being an emotionally intelligent leader is a long one. It's not like you build that overnight. Mm-hmm. But I would probably want to make sure he was aware of himself and learning how to be aware of other people and how to navigate those relationships.
And I think a lot of online business people kind of share that same trait, that they've been doing their thing for so long. So when they start bringing in team members to help them with, you know, it could be anything from digital marketing to, you know, making it again, a SaaS, you know, sort of business.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them do share that lack of EQ. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, is that what you guys see with Richard and kind of
yeah.
the folks that you yeah. work with?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, it's super hard for all of us. We all need to work on it, and it really makes such a difference. Mm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. So Aaron, we are just past the halfway mark for the year. Solstice is past.
Wild.
What? I know.
How did that happen so fast?
But so I'm kind of curious, you know, this is a really important check-in point for me and my clients, at least, you know, like what we're here at the halfway point. You've got 6 months left. What do you want to happen? How are your goals doing? So I'm sure you have some really wonderful ideas about where you want to be pushing yourself for the rest of the year. Do you have any that you would like to share with us?
Oh, cool. I haven't been asked that yet, actually, in that way. So I'm in an interesting position, and I know you've had other guests on your show that are new moms too. And so I have a 1-year-old, and what I am balancing is kind of pushing myself from a business perspective, but now I can't push it in the way that I would if I was a single person.
Right.
Right. And so I've got 2 other humans that I'm also doing a dance with that I need to be there for. So I would say this has been a really, really awesome year for me. And I'm curious where I'm looking ahead is, I think about my own sustainability, like how do you sustain a consulting coaching practice and a family? For me, it's looking at strategic partnerships and alliances. And speaking of those relationships, I think that's going to be an important thing for my own growth and ability to do the work that I love, have the impact that I want to have, but also not do it alone. Because I think that's kind of the struggle of the entrepreneur, right?
And absolutely. We're all very independent.
Right. We're all in this spot. And it's like, well, you've got a couple of choices. You either build a team around you, which really takes a lot of energy, or you have strategic alliances and partnerships where you can kind of sort of do similar things in that way, but maybe in a more sustainable way. So that's what I'm thinking about.
So strategic alliances, that sounds like cool stuff. Are you planning on getting to any speaking engagements or anything like that? Or what are you...
Yeah, I've done some speaking engagements recently, earlier in the year at some kind of women-oriented events, and would love to do a few more. I am going to be promoting this soon, where my partner and I are doing a really exciting, intense kind of deep dive workshop in October around becoming an integrated leader and how to build these kind of relationships, these emotionally intelligent relationships at work. Mm. And so we're going to be doing that in San Diego in October for people of influence. I use that phrase very thoughtfully. So you don't have to be a traditional leader, but could be a social influencer in some way. And so I'll be sharing about that here coming up in the next month or two. And besides some active clients, that's keeping my plate pretty full right now.
Awesome.
Well, I'll have to share some contacts out that way and hopefully help you synergize those events a little bit more. So cool.
Oh, thanks.
Moving on to the rapid fire question segment. First one, favorite one, three influencers or teachers that have helped you to get where you're at today.
Oh my gosh. This question overwhelms me because I feel incredibly grateful, for the people that have guided me. I would say, not to sound corny, but a huge influencer and person who's given me a tremendous opportunity launching my career was my dad. Really, really pivotal, love him dearly, and is a very strong force in my life today, even as I've kind of ventured out onto my own. I would say there's been a couple of female leaders that I have looked up to and have guided me. A woman who's very close to my family, Dee Dee Henley, I love and adore. Watched her build a consulting business. And then today I've got a couple of very dear friends who are also in this field who we support each other and guide each other. And, you know, you guys know we can't do this alone. And there's a whole community of women and men that I would put in that bucket. And so just that's been a game changer for me, is kind of creating that supportive community.
If you could have dinner with anyone living or dead, who would it be?
Oh my gosh. This is like the worst throwaway answer ever, but I'm also a big fan of The Crown. And I would really want to sit down with the Queen and understand how she has been able to rein in her human emotions amidst this big job. Because that's kind of the big lesson, is like she sacrificed who she was as a person for the role. And I could never do that.
Right.
Like, I firmly believe in being yourself in your work and being authentic. And what she's been asked to do is the complete opposite of that. So I would be curious to see if there's any part of that woman still in there, as if she's completely died off. I don't know.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Wow.
I haven't really thought about it that way. But yeah, that's a good one. In the last 5 years, what is a new belief or behavior or potentially a habit that has most improved your life?
Hands down, I would say it's this idea about creating space. I am a person who tends to be impatient. You mentioned that earlier on about coaching. I want everything done quickly and efficiently and like top quality. And why isn't it done yet? That's kind of my natural mode. And over the last few years, I've been really working on this idea about taking a longer view and being able to hold space around me so I can be reflective and not just jump to action, but actually pick the right next move for me after I've thought about it deeply and checked in with myself and said, does this line up with my values? Does this line up with what's most essential to me and the people I care about, right? But that only happens when you have space and not have 500 meetings in a given day or run like a crazy person, like mm-hmm. I used to. So that's been a huge deal for me.
And that's helped me quite a bit recently too, because if it wasn't for that space, I would not have relationships that I've been developing here locally. You know, I was trying to be that online entity that so many of us do. And because I was doing that, I was being Mr. Superman about it. I didn't have time to meet people here locally. And now that I am meeting people here locally, it's like, you want to talk about amplification of your, of what you're trying to do. I mean, it's amazing. So
cool. Wow. And I bet it's like way more fulfilling, right? Yeah. To have real relationships with people in your neighborhood or area. Sure. It feels really good. Good for you.
Mm-hmm. So what advice do you hear adults giving children often that you call BS on?
This is such a cool question. I would say, they always say like, tough it up, you know, toughen up. Don't cry. Don't be upset. And I hate to see adults, now that I am a parent, to see adults tell kids to shove away how they're feeling, and not to sound too soft and, you know, woo-woo about this, but I actually think emotions are really important directional guides for us.
Yeah, totally.
Not like we need to follow everything that they say, right? But like, we have to give them space, because what I've learned is if I don't give my emotions space to be heard, it's going to erupt some way or another. And I'd much rather have it be in that moment in a way that is healthy. So
yeah, they're literally like our way of understanding the world. Every emotion is basically an internal reaction to our environment. So to ignore that, even if you're just upset about something in a movie, so like it's not actually life threatening, it's still an experience that you had within yourself. You have to process it.
Absolutely. So I feel like we should be telling our kids like, oh, you're upset? Tell me about that. What's upsetting? So they can learn. It's about learning. It's not about having to appear like you're tough all the time.
Or stuffing it down and not ever dealing with it.
Totally. It's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a local presentation. A guy by the name of George Middleton was talking about how there is, I believe it's, he said, emotions, beliefs, and facts, I think, are like the three main things that you have to pay attention to when you're actually kind of trying to communicate with someone. And you have to be able to figure out which of those three that you guys are actually communicating on.
Yes. You know. I love that. Mm-hmm. And so much of the time we collapse them and we think that our beliefs are fact or our emotions are fact. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you can separate those out and distinguish that, you have so much more choice. You know? It's really cool. I love that.
He's a pretty cool guy. You'd enjoy his workshop. What's the secret to achieving personal freedom?
Self-awareness. Because until you are aware of who you are, what you care about, your strengths, your own vision for your own life, you can't create a life that you love, and you can't build work based on that. So I think, you know, self-awareness is the first step. It's not the last step, but it's the first step that I think is most important. Mm.
What's a good way for someone to build that self-awareness?
I would say you can certainly go through kind of external programs, coaches, that sort of thing, if you've got the means and time. But even as simply as taking time in the morning when you're drinking coffee with a piece of paper and starting to get stuff out of your head. You know, here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I'm feeling today. And then going back and go, oh, isn't that interesting? And then you start to notice some patterns and themes. And it can be, it sounds so basic, but you have to start getting the stuff that we're kind of swimming in the soup, right? Until we get it out of our head, we can't do anything with it.
Right. Right.
Right. Yeah, you can't even get away far enough to see the difference between the carrots and the peas.
And then to realize, God, I don't even like carrots and peas. Why am I in the soup?
Yeah. Why are those in my head?
Exactly. Too cool. Well, Aaron, people can find you on aaronrocchio.com, again, spelled E-R-I-N-R-O-C-C-H-I-O.com. Where can people find you on the socials?
Thank you. Twitter, Aaron T. Rocchio. LinkedIn, Aaron Rocchio. Facebook, Aaron Rocchio Consulting.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for being on here with us today. And
of course, this was so much fun, you guys. Stuff. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
have a wonderful day. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Aaron. You know, the three of us could have talked forever about the culture of organizations, personalities, and really, you know, applied leadership skills and how they all can really amplify an organization and what it's trying to do. I've written a bit about it in the blog, but I'm glad I was able to have someone on the show that helps her clients with what I learned about quite a bit, actually, in grad school. It's not the most attractive of topics. I realized that over the years, but once you really start being able to identify similarities between, you know, different leaders and their successful teams, you know, you can really turn around and apply that to your own work. And if you want to continue today's conversation, the show notes can be found at newinceptions.com/128. And in the show note extras, I have a couple more interviews with Aaron available. One was done with Ronald Akuming on the Internet Marketing and Business Solutions radio show. And the other interview after that is on the Career Medics podcast with Nassar Ahmed. Both interviews are asked questions that we didn't get to in our session with Aaron today. Next step, Aaron spoke highly about Ginger Lapid Bhangda, who is the founder of the Enneagram in Business. If you want to go deeper into what the Enneagram is and more info on what it can do for you, then check that one out with Ian McNay. Don't forget that Ginger was the one that Aaron learned about the Enneagram from. Then, after that, I wrap it up with a video of a guy by the name of Dr. David Cooperwriter, and he talks to us about appreciative inquiry. And this is one of the strategies that Aaron didn't really get to in our conversation, but nonetheless, she uses it to help teams get better at working together. And in fact, it's something that is talked about quite a bit in what's called change management. And change management is something that I think most leaders really need to be aware of how to do properly. There's definitely a right way and definitely a wrong way. But guys, that's it for session 128. Thank you so much for listening in. Hope we were able to give you some value today. In the next session, Veronica joins me again as we speak with Jessica Rhodes. Jessica is the founder of Interview Connections and has a really interesting story on how she went from being a VA for her dad all the way to starting the go-to agency for people who want to be featured on business podcasts. You know, we find out a few of the secrets of hers, including how she built her business through networking, how she built her team, and when actually a thought leader should consider planning a podcast tour. Until then, don't forget to check out Namecheap if you're looking for a new host for your site. Again, get free WhoisGuard for a year by going to newinceptions.com/namecheap. And that being said, guys, thanks for joining Veronica, Aaron, and myself today. Until next session, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.